The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Beautiful, beautiful afternoon here at Edstone. We're coming to you live here at the middle part of this week, last day of classes for Armstrong College. So they start in with their testing tomorrow. Just want to plug the latest Trumpet magazine right here at the start. May, June 2020, Coronapocalypse. Coronapocalypse. And as I've been noting, with each of these issues right through this year, this really is out front. It's out in front of what you're seeing in the daily news cycle. And this issue is not an exception to that rule. The same out front coverage and reporting. The headlines here on the cover, it says, it's changing the world and fulfilling prophecy. Will it wreck the EU? The cure is killing us. Can the global economy recover? How can you survive? These are some of the headlines from the latest Trumpet magazine, right off the cover. If you're reading the Trumpet, if you're going to the website, if you're listening to this program, if you're watching my father's show, The Key of David, then you truly are informed as no other individual on earth is informed. It's a small group, those supporting God's work. But what a special, special group it is. And what information and truth and revelation and knowledge and understanding God has made available to his little flock. My father wrote in the Ezekiel End Time Prophet booklet, he said, when you see the way world events are unfolding, you know an explosion is about to happen. You just know it. When you see world events, when you see what's happening today, you know an explosion is coming. It's only a matter of when, he said. This is in the Ezekiel booklet. He writes, we live in a time when the transgressors are come to a full. That's a reference to Daniel 8:23. He says, there has never been evil as there is today. And the Bible prophesies that it will culminate in a nuclear World War III. And then he says, do we have the urgency we need in these dangerous times? It's a dangerous world, 2 Timothy 3:1. It's an evil world, Galatians 1:4. This is what your Bible has prophesied, and we're seeing it. We're witnessing it. And it should bring some urgency to our spiritual lives. It should bring some urgency to our daily living. It should serve as quite a motivation, quite the prod to get ready for, to prepare for the return of Jesus Christ to this earth. And so now the modelers are saying a second wave is coming in June. 3,000 daily deaths in the United States. They were, of course, estimating back in March that it was going to be millions and millions of deaths just in the U.S. and Britain. And these are two nations that have pretty good healthcare systems. So what does that mean for the rest of the world? Here again, let's keep these figures in perspective. 70,000 or so deaths now in the United States. We're just about to the point where we're at with the opioid crisis. 72,000 Americans killing themselves on opioids every single year. This is not one season. This is not one particularly bad flu season. This is every year. And this is just one cause of death. drug overdoses. Now the coronavirus is up to that level. And if you look at the figures worldwide, here again, it doesn't even come close to causes of death like tuberculosis. 3,000 deaths a day in Germany. They've been lifting restrictions over the past 2 weeks. No sign of a second wave there. In fact, the rate of infections is decreasing in Germany, even as they lift restrictions. But you would never know this if you're listening to news reporters. And can you even call them news reporters in the United States? They are left-wing ideologues. They are activists wearing nice suits. They are activists. They're left-wing radicals. They're Democrats. They're Marxists, so many of them. And so every step of the way, every step out of lockdown is going to be met with fierce resistance. If you take one more step in that direction, President Trump, then you're responsible for killing more Americans. They've already laid the blame on him for the whole crisis. He's the cause of the pandemic. Here's what he said yesterday in Arizona about coming out of this lockdown, clip two.
I'm viewing our great citizens of this country to a certain extent and to a large extent as warriors. They're warriors. We can't keep our country closed. We have to open our country. Somebody said, oh, we could keep it for the next 18 months. We could keep it for the next 2 years. Doug Ducey's done an incredible job as the governor of Arizona. The people aren't going to accept it. They won't accept it, and they shouldn't accept it. We have a great country. We can't keep it closed. I mean, I've had doctors say, well, why don't we close it for a couple of years? This is the United States of America.
And so here's the president, and again, in the last few weeks, he's gone back and forth a little bit. You've heard some of the clips on this program. He said a couple weeks back, the cure can't be worse than the problem. And then he backed away from that, and he criticized Georgia for coming out of the lockdown too early. But now you're seeing reports that he's about to disband the coronavirus task force. And now the number one item on the agenda is bringing the United States out of this. We can't just keep it closed. And yet, if you hear what he's saying there, there's still plenty of people around him saying, keep it closed. Keep it closed. There was a model, or at least the news from it that was released yesterday. The Wharton School, just wherever that is, just unveiled a model that looks at several different scenarios that could happen at stages, as states begin to lift the stay-at-home orders. Look at this model. You've got scenario one. If the states continue with the stay-at-home orders, then there's going to be 117,000 deaths by the end of June. Now, if there's a partial reopening, this is scenario two. From where? The Wharton School. Scenario two, partially reopening. Then we've got 162,000 additional deaths. You see, they already know that the lockdown works. It saves lives. And there's no scientific evidence supporting this. There's no facts supporting it. But they just know. So here come the models. And they say now, scenario three, if all the states fully reopen, you're looking at 350,000 deaths. 350,000. So here, as I say, is what the president is going to be running up against every step of the way. There'll be another new model. And then when those models are proven wrong, they'll adjust the figures and then say, well, you should be congratulating us. You shouldn't be saying we got it wrong. You should be congratulating us because you heeded the warnings. And we've saved lives. Here's another bit from President Trump yesterday, clip three.
I created, with a lot of other very talented people and the people of our country, the greatest economy in the history of the world. The greatest that we've ever had. the greatest employment numbers, the best numbers we've ever had, the best stock markets. I think we had 144 days of record stock markets. And then one day they said, we have to close our country. Well, now it's time to open it up. And you know what? The people of our country are warriors, and I'm looking at it. I'm not saying anything is perfect. And yes, will some people be affected? Yes. Will some people be affected badly? Yes. But we have to get our country open, and we have to get it open soon.
He said in the middle of that, you'll notice that, and then one day they just came in and said, this is what we have to do. We're just supposed to do this. And everyone did it, except for a few, Sweden and Brazil, a few others. But everyone did it. And now, just as an example, listen to Senator Chris Murphy. I think he's in Connecticut. And here he is talking about the thousands of lives because of opening up, the thousands of lives that this costs, the decision to come out of the lockdown. Clip one.
That's essentially what the president is saying, is that we just have to accept that as a price of being able to go to the movie theater again, there are going to be 3,000 people every single day who will die needlessly.
Just because we want to go to the movies, 3,000 people dying every day needlessly. We've not even reached that figure once. I don't believe. I think it's been under 3,000, even at the peak of this pandemic for the United States. But that's what's coming on June 1st. And it's going to be worse if these states start coming out. Now, that's essentially, if you go back to the start of this crisis, and that's why I refer you to the latest Trumpet, here are all these articles put together weeks ago. This Trumpet came out quite a few, 2-3 weeks ago, I think it is. The articles were prepared earlier than that. But all of those articles, even though they've been sitting in that magazine for several weeks, they're as timely today as they were back then when they were written. That's the Trumpet magazine. If you go back to the beginning, mid-March, again, you'll know this if you've read through that issue. But that's essentially what Neil Ferguson told the United Kingdom and by extension the United States. He basically said, if you don't shut down the theaters and, well, everything else on top of it, the pubs, the stores, the department stores, everything, if you don't shut it all down like China did, then you're going to have all of these thousands, tens of thousands of people dying needlessly. Let me just remind you of some of that history. This is in the latest Trumpet. The article I wrote on the cure is killing us. It says here, together with the radical left, the Democrat media complex, the WHO, and China's communist government, plenty of Western scientists and medical experts were available to create terrifying models, charts, graphs, and reports to show that COVID-19 was a catastrophe in the making. It says, for the U.S. and Britain, the most authoritative and influential team of experts came from Imperial College London. It says, the New York Times wrote, with ties to the World Health Organization and a team of 50 scientists led by prominent epidemiologist Neil Ferguson, Imperial is treated as a sort of gold standard. Its mathematical models feeding directly into government policies. And so if you read that article, you know how influential this group of scholars from Imperial College, led by Neil Ferguson, they're the gold standard. They're the ones Boris Johnson and Donald Trump, they relied on this team to formulate policies that would result in a total lockdown. This takes you back to mid-March. If you don't do what we're saying, it's 2.2 million deaths in the U.S., and it's 510,000 deaths or 600,000, whatever it was, in the UK. It says further on in this piece, Ferguson's March 16 report began by saying the public health threat of COVID-19 is the most serious seen in a respiratory virus since the 1918 H1N1 influenza pandemic. So it's as bad as anything we've seen since the Spanish flu of 1918. The Spanish flu that killed something like 50 million to 100 million people worldwide. At present, the death toll for coronavirus, what is it, 250,000? 248,000 deaths. But this is the worst since the Spanish flu. That's not even true yet, by the way. Maybe it'll end up being second. We'll see. Right now, it's nowhere close to the Spanish flu. And we're still waiting to see if it ends up being worse than a really bad flu season, like the one in 2017 and 18. Or the one in, I think it was 1969. It says here, finally, the Post wrote, this is the Washington Post, if the British government quickly went all out to suppress viral spread, aiming to reverse epidemic growth and reduce the caseload to a low level, then the number of dead in the country could drop to below 20,000. So this was what Neil Ferguson's group was saying. If you take these extreme draconian actions, then maybe you can reduce it down to these levels. Ferguson told the New York Times, based on our estimates and other teams, there's really no option but to follow in China's footsteps and suppress. This is what we've got to do to flatten the curve. No one even talks about flattening the curve anymore. Now it's just, we've got to keep doing this until this virus is completely wiped out, as if that would ever happen. Well, here was Ferguson going back to February 28th. I gave you the quote in that article, the quote that he gave to the New York Times, that we've basically got to follow China's lead. A total lockdown, an authoritarian lockdown, put the whole nation under house arrest. I don't even think China did that, actually. It was around Wuhan. But he's saying we've got to follow in China's steps. He told that to the New York Times, and here he is in an interview from February 28th saying the same thing. Clip 10.
One has to adopt the sort of community measures which have been adopted, particularly in places like Wuhan and China, where you try to reduce contacts between people in the community. So the sorts of measures which are important are, first of all, if anybody has any sort of respiratory disease, cold, anything, stay at home until those symptoms are fully resolved.
So that was him back in February of this year, February 28th. And then you know about his report on March 16th. He also had a speech that he gave to Prime Minister Johnson's government on March 17th. The day after that, he himself came down with the virus. And he tweeted about it, I think, on March 20th. And then we now know, thanks to an expose from the Daily Telegraph last night, that he was carrying on with an affair, a sexual affair with a married woman. Just a few days after, he was tested positive. Tested positive March 20th. And then as far as the Telegraph knows, he met up with this woman on March the 30th. Just 10 days later. It says at the Telegraph, the epidemiologist leads the team at Imperial College London that produced the model. It talks about some of the model here. It says, Professor Ferguson has frequently appeared in the media to support the lockdown and praise the very intensive social distancing measures. Very intensive for everyone else, except him, of course. He can do what he wants. He can hook up with a married woman, and then she can go back to her husband and her children! And her children! Her two children! It says the 51-year-old had only just finished a two-week spell self-isolating after testing positive for the coronavirus, had only just finished before the tryst, that is, and that's actually not correct. He didn't even make it to 2 weeks. He went 10, maybe 11 days. He didn't even go, we hear 14 days, right? You travel to this nation or that, you've got to quarantine yourself for 14 days. This is Professor Lockdown. And he didn't quarantine himself for 14 days when he himself got the disease that he's been sounding the alarm about. Says Professor Ferguson told the Telegraph, I accept I made an error in judgment and took the wrong course of action. Further on, he writes, I acted in the belief that I was immune, having tested positive for coronavirus, and completely isolated myself for almost 2 weeks after developing symptoms. I almost went 14 days, but then, you know, she came over. She came over. He didn't quite make it to 14 days. Now, everybody else, they've got to adhere to these strict, these very intensive social distancing measures. We've had pronouncements from the government that have pointed out actions just like this. They're forbidden. The government's used the word illegal, in fact. It says the first of Mrs. Stats' visits, this is the woman, she's an activist, by the way. From best we can tell, she's a climate change activist. Surprise, surprise. So here he is, a left-wing academic who's been studying diseases his whole life, and he's gotten it wrong one after another after another. I'll get to that in just a moment. And then he's hooking up with this climate change activist. It says her visit on Monday, March 30th, coincided with a public warning by Professor Ferguson that the one-week-old lockdown measures would have to be, they would have to remain until June. It says Mrs. Stats, a left-wing campaigner, made a second visit on April 8th, despite telling friends she suspected that her husband, an academic in his 30s, had symptoms of coronavirus. So she told friends her she thought her husband had it. We know Neil Ferguson had it because he tweeted about it. He was tested positive. And then here they are. In her case, she's driving across London to meet up with her lover. It's like a soap opera, except that it's true. And these are the people running the world. Says she and her husband live together with their two children in a $1.9 million home, but are understood to be in an open marriage. Okay. So they're in an open marriage. And it says she has told friends about her relationship with Professor Ferguson, but does not believe their actions to be hypocritical because she considers the households to be one. She was just crossing town to spend some time with family. This was a family reunion. Nothing to be embarrassed about here. Nothing to apologize for. It's not hypocrisy, not in the least. He's family, and so is my husband. It says, but 1 week after the first tryst, Dr. Harries, the deputy chief medical officer, and Matt Hancock, the health secretary, clarified during the daily Downing Street press conference that couples not living together must stay apart during the lockdown. Couples not living together must stay. That's from Matt Hancock. He's like Dr. Fauci in this country. It says here, Grant Shapps, the transport secretary, recently reminded the public that it was illegal to be outside the home for one of any other of the four reasons. Those reasons are medical emergency, daily exercise, essential food shopping, and certain types of work. So I'm sure that they'll take one of those four and say, well, this can kind of apply. It says police in England and Wales have handed out more than 9,000 fines during the lockdown, equivalent to one every 5 minutes. But it's these people, it's these left-wing ideologues that They give the rules, they don't live by it themselves, and then they're never penalized. One citation every 5 minutes for an older gentleman by himself walking alone in the Peak District? That's the sort of nonsense that's going on. Someone, a blog here in the UK, turned up this soundbite from Mrs. Stott, the one having the affair with Neil Ferguson. She, according to the Telegraph, as I say, met up with him on March 30th And then this is what she said on a podcast the next day, the very next day, March 31st, clip 8.
It is a strain. And I think it's also, you know, you mentioned how it impacts us all personally. I think it's also a strain on, I mean, maybe strain sounds too negative, but it's an interesting relationship challenge. I mean, for, you know, Chris and my relationship, but also for the relationship with the children and the relationship between the children, because we just spend a lot more time and quite different time with each other all of a sudden, right? You know,
she's talking about the lockdown, the effect of it, the strain of it. These are the trials and the travails of the left-wing technocrats. They're having to spend more time with their family. It's been hard for her staying with her husband so long, and for her children, spending that much time with her children. So she's got to break away from that from time to time. And she did that on March 30th and April 8th. At least as far as we know, there could be more. It's an open marriage, keep in mind. These are the technocrats running the world. God says the world. If you look at Galatians 1:4, what does he say? He says it's an evil world. It's an evil world. You look at some of the history again, these dates, I think, are quite revealing. And it's good to go back. You have a lot of it in the recent trumpet. But it's worth repeating some of this because we, as a society, we're being played. We're being lied to. Truth fails. Truth is being cast to the ground. This is from Business Insider, April 25th. It says, it's no exaggeration that Ferguson's papers saved hundreds of lives. Well, that's what Business Insider thinks. But in the story, there is an irony that he may have helped infect the highest levels of government with the virus. This is Neil Ferguson, the one who supposedly saved us all. It says, on March 17, Ferguson strolled under the architrave of the 10 Downing Street ahead of a 5 p.m. press conference where he would outline his findings. He greeted senior members of Prime Minister Johnson's cabinet, gave his speech, and left. That was March 17th. Ferguson woke at 4 a.m. the next morning with a high fever interspersed with a dry cough. It says, on March 19th, he tested positive for coronavirus. So this is the one who undoubtedly, forget about the fact that he only quarantined himself for 11 days, so far as we know, he's the one that undoubtedly infected the prime minister's cabinet, including the prime minister himself. Prime Minister Johnson says that he nearly died from this. In fact, he says NHS saved his life. The prime minister of the UK. He was in intensive care for 3 days, I think it was. So here comes the modeler, gives his big speech. And what if he had some symptoms going in? Well, he undoubtedly was contagious because it spread. But how much did he know? How much? We know he knew a lot when he got together with this woman on March 30th because he knew it was positive. The whole world did. And just totally disregarded the social distancing laws. These are laws. People are being fined in the nation at a rate of 1 every 5 minutes. Well, following that speech on March 17th, Prime Minister Johnson, his chief advisor, Dominic Cummings, the health secretary, even Matt Hancock, the chief medical officer, Chris Whitty, they all came down with the virus. You know, Andrew Cuomo, Chris Cuomo, those types will, they'll pontificate right out in front of everyone. If you don't wear a mask, you could kill somebody. Look at what this man did. If we're gonna all abide by their logic, their rules, their standard of ethics, look at the reckless behavior of this modeler who's demanding that the world be shut down. Even as he carries on with these extramarital affairs, and then greeting everyone in the prime minister's cabinet, even while he's infected. Why wasn't he tested even before he went into the prime minister's office? If it's that serious, if it's going to kill millions of people, what a security breach. He goes in to see the prime minister without even getting tested? It says here, it gets, speaking of Ferguson's, his outfit, the MRC, Center for Global Infectious Disease Analysis, based at Imperial. The article here says, this is Business Insider, it gets tens of millions of dollars in annual funding from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and works with the UK National Health Service, the U.S. Centers for Disease and Prevention and Control, and is tasked with supplying the World Health Organization with rapid analysis of urgent infectious disease problems. I'm not making this up. You have the Imperial team. You have the Bill Gates Foundation. You have the NHS. You have the CDC. You have the WHO. The only thing it doesn't mention there is the communist state of China. But they're there too because, well, the WHO is an extension of that communist state. You see how deep the deep state is? Big tech. Big medicine. Big pharma. Big government. Big media. Big university. Everyone's in on it. And if they're not, they're duped by it. They just came into my office and said, this is what we got to do. I guess this is just what we're all supposed to do, including India. And now people are starving in India. Can you believe this? The present evil world. Listen to this string of failures. It says, in 2009, one of Ferguson's models predicted 65,000 people could die from the swine flu outbreak in the UK. The final figure was below 500. He was just a little bit off on the swine flu. He predicted 65,000. Final tally, 500. It says Michael Thrusfield, a professor of veterinary epidemiology at Edinburgh, told the paper he had deja vu after reading the Imperial paper saying Ferguson was responsible for excessive animal culling during the 2001 foot and mouth outbreak. Ferguson warned the government that 150,000 people could die. So 6 million animals were slaughtered as a precaution. 6 million animals slaughtered, costing the country billions in farming revenue. In the end, 200 people died. Now, he said 150,000 would die. And they killed how many animals? Where were the animal rights activists? Where was PETA? I don't know. Maybe they were there. I don't know much about this history. 6 million animals slaughtered? The model said to do it, so we just had to do it. It's just what we're supposed to do. It says, similarly, he was accused of creating panic by overestimating the potential death toll during the 2005 bird flu outbreak. Ferguson estimated 200 million could die. The real number was in the low hundreds. So none of this ruined his career. Only now, a sexual scandal. And we'll see if it even ruins it. So far as I can tell, it's just taking him off the government task force here in the UK. But he probably will still, it seems like he would avoid it just out of shame. But we'll see. He'll lie low for a while, I'm sure, and then show up at Imperial and continue on with his modeling. This is what he's good at. I mean, he's an expert. He's churning out models right and left. There is no better time to be a modeler than right now. It says here, after all these failures, he estimated 200 million would die. The real number was in the low hundreds. And yet, listen to the next line in the article. However, Ferguson's role in the foot and mouth outbreak is remembered as overwhelmingly positive. Queen Elizabeth II awarded him The Order of the British Empire in 2002 for advising Tony Blair's government. So he's rewarded. He receives awards for these catastrophic failings. He's an expert, and we're just supposed to believe the experts, right? The article says Dr. Birx, a coronavirus response coordinator for the Trump administration, told journalists at a March 16 press briefing that the Imperial paper prompted the CDC's new advice to work from home and avoid gatherings of 10 or more. Now, you've gotten some of this from the latest trumpet, how that this man's model influenced not only the UK's decision to go into full lockdown, but the United States as well. Now, the United States wasn't as, you know, as emphatic and as total as the UK, because you do have different states under the leadership of different governors that reacted differently. There were a few states, five or six of them, that didn't go into full lockdown, but they came under withering attacks from the West Coast and the East Coast media. And they are, even at this moment. Ferguson said, even after he's revised all these figures in his initial model, he said more recently, we will have to maintain some level of social distancing, a significant level of social distancing, probably indefinitely until we have a vaccine. And so the social distancing rules will have to stay in place, he said. For everyone except him, they'll have to stay in place until we find the vaccine, until we get a vaccine. Now, his paramour is an activist herself. She's in her mid-30s. She's out with the protesters. She's all in with climate change. Listen to this from the BBC this morning. And again, you think about all of these agencies, these organizations involved in this hoax. That's what it is. And then listen to this. It says the UK, this is more modeling. It's not going to stop with coronavirus. It says the UK must avoid lurching from the coronavirus crisis into a deeper climate crisis. The government's advisors have... So here are more advisors. They're advising the Johnson government. And with Prime Minister Johnson, at least with respect to climate change, well, they've got a pretty sympathetic ear there. Maybe not as much with President Trump. But here are the advisors. BBC says they recommended that ministers ensure funds earmarked for the post-COVID-19 economic recovery go to firms that will reduce carbon emissions. Firms that will reduce carbon emissions, it says. They say the public should work from home if possible and to walk or cycle. And investment should prioritize broadband over road building. So we don't need the roads. Let's get the internet up and running, or at least more powerful, so that people can stay. This is what they've dreamed about for all of society, all the time. It gives them this virus. It gives them the opportunity of a lifetime. And that's why you hear them. Some of these left-wingers, they can't hardly help themselves saying this. Hillary Clinton has said it. This gives us an opportunity. Joe Biden said it just the other day. In fact, when he had the exchange with Bernie Sanders, this goes back to mid-April, I believe it is, but listen to what he said to Bernie Sanders. I forget what number, but play the clip.
Look, the United States has no choice but to seize this opportunity and create millions, millions of great-paying jobs that your energy plan has suggested and mine as well. An energy infrastructure of tomorrow, not going back to anything that was before, tomorrow. And we take a backseat to no one when it comes to fighting climate change or when it comes to creating good-paying jobs, middle-class jobs, union jobs.
This is an opportunity, he said to Bernie Sanders. And, of course, Bernie Sanders was there nodding along. And I'm sure AOC was somewhere grinning from ear to ear as well. Do you remember how, after she came out with the Green New Deal, just how many people mocked and ridiculed her? It's so preposterous. Whoa, what are you saying? We're not going to fly from continent to continent? Well, how are we going to get from Europe to the United States without air travel? Well, now you look at where we are. That was just last year, I believe. Not even a year ago, was it? The Green New Deal. Just preposterous. Trillions of dollars of government programs, no air travel, and now look at where we are. Of course this is an opportunity for them. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal just from a couple days ago. Pelosi's coronavirus power grab. She's got all of the House of Representatives. They're not supposed to come into work. I guess they're non-essential. This is strange, the rules. Well, who is essential and who's non-essential? Evidently, the House of Representatives is non-essential, so they stay away from work until Pelosi says, hey, we've got a package here, a bill put together. I've put it together. Just come in for a quick vote. It's a yes or no vote. You don't even really have any say. This is what she's doing to impose her will on the American people, to hold them hostage. And of course, in the back and forth negotiations with her and President Trump's team and task force, well, the compromise always results in, what is it, trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars, more government programs. Give the left everything that they want, just so long as we can send out checks to the American people and help get them by during this financial crisis. Pelosi's power grab. This author, he's a Republican congressman. He writes, when nobody is around, it's easier to make backroom deals, and Speaker Pelosi is taking advantage. She has consolidated the power of the institution in her person. You see, right now, she is the House of Representatives. None of the others are there. And so this representative, I think he comes from Alabama, he says, I've got people calling me right and left from my district, saying, what's going on? When are we going to come out of the shutdown? But he doesn't even have a voice, this representative, because they're not even going to work. And so it's basically a one-man show or a one-woman show as she runs the House of Representatives from her mansion in Northern California. It says here, without lawmakers, they're there to speak up for their districts and to influence the legislative process. Mrs. Pelosi has made herself the sole voice and negotiator for the House as it passes massive funding and regulatory bills. She is the House of Representatives. So you see the same storyline as it plays out here in the UK, in Washington, in New York, in California. All of these hypocrites, all of these big government socialists, all of these proponents of state socialism, the radical left, it didn't go away with the victory of Donald Trump in 2016. Far from it. Now they're seizing their opportunity to expand the size and the power and the scope of government like never before, and to hopefully, the way they view it, ruin the U.S. economy in the process so that it destroys the Trump presidency. And so that's why they come out with their daily pronouncements. You stay indoors. This was Chris Cuomo. He's finally back at work after his bout with coronavirus, and he's pointing at the people on his screen that want to get outside during this pandemic, during this lockdown. And he said this, clip 6.
But there's also fatigue. I've had it. Season's changing. It's getting warm. Want to get back to it. Look at these fools. Fools. I know they want to be out there. Fools. It's not about you. What about the other people?
It's not about you, he says to those people who went out of doors. People that presumably aren't even sick. He went out of doors when he was sick. He had to go check on his second home being built in the Hamptons. So he's outside and he's COVID-19 positive. See, he can do it. He can leave. He can have interaction with people even when he's sick. And same with Neil Ferguson. That's no problem. And in the case of New York, as we've covered on this program, Andrew Cuomo, the brother of Chris, well, he'll send sick people right into the nursing homes. Are they really concerned about stamping out the virus and the effects of the virus? Or are they most concerned about imposing their will on their nations, on this world? The lockdown, that's what they're here to impose. It's the lockdown and all the destruction that comes along with it. What a crisis. And so much of it, like I said yesterday, so much of it man-made. Dennis Prager had a column this week, the worldwide lockdown may be the greatest mistake in history. And there was a graphic in his column that very similar to one that Mr. Armstrong had for his booklet back in 1985. You see his booklet on the left of the screen there, A World Held Captive. And then you can see the graphic on from Dennis Prager's column, this world surrounded in well, some kind of a cage with razor wiring at the top and then bolt locked shut. A world held captive. Of course, Mr. Armstrong was talking about this world held captive in the spiritual sense. Prager's talking about the captivity of this pandemic, what it's brought on, the lockdown. And I'm here to tell you that the captivity in the spiritual sense is far worse. It's far worse than the virus. It's far worse than the lockdown. Jeremiah 17 talks about a sickness, a disease. Jesus Christ spoke of a physician that we needed to heal ourselves. Leave aside coronavirus for a moment. Look at what spiritual sickness, look at what mental sickness is doing to our world, to our nations. Prager writes in his column, the idea that the worldwide lockdown is of virtually every country other than Sweden may have been an enormous mistake, strikes many, including world leaders, most scientists, especially health officials, doctors and epidemiologists, those who work in major news media, opinion writers in those media, and the hundreds of millions, if not billions, of people who put their faith in these people. It strikes them as so preposterous as to be immoral. Well, it's just what we're supposed to do. And if you question it, even if you point out hypocrisy here or here or here, still, stay with the model. Do not question the model. Do not question the experts, even if they're hypocrites. Do not question them. And if you do, it's you who is immoral. It says, Timothy Egan of the New York Times described Republicans who wish to enable their states to open as the party of death. They're the party of death. Chris Cuomo says to people going outside, venturing outside into the sunlight for some vitamin D, he says they're fools. It says, that's the way it is today on planet Earth, where deceit, cowardice, and immaturity now dominate almost all societies because the elites are deceitful, cowardly, and immature. Spot on. It's Isaiah 3. The children are running things. The inmates have control over the asylum. That's what we're seeing, and it's prophesied. Galatians 1:4 says that Jesus gave himself for our sins that he might deliver us from this present evil world. Christ sacrificed himself so that we could come out of this. The world that then was, that's before Noah, it purged. It was purged by the flood, an earthwide flood. And this present evil world, as it's described in Galatians 1:4, Jesus prophesied that it would be just as bad, even worse, in fact, than it was in the days of Noah. But there is hope. The Bible speaks of three worlds. You've got the antediluvian world. That's the world before the flood. You've got the present evil world. That's the world we're now in. and you have the wonderful world of tomorrow, the world to come, as it says in Hebrews 2:5. The world to come in his prayer outline in Matthew 6, Luke 11. Jesus said to his disciples, when you pray to God, after hallowing his name and such, your first request ought to be, thy kingdom come. Pray thy kingdom come. Further on in the outline, he said, pray thy will be done in earth as it is in heaven. We need God. When you look at God's will today, is it being carried out? Except for the small, little flock of God's people. Where do you see God's will being fulfilled today? Thy kingdom come. Thy will be done. God's will. This is what Herbert Armstrong wrote in 1974. God's will not come for the whole world until the kingdom of God does appear. With the coming of Jesus Christ in supreme power and glory, as the King of Kings and Lord of Lords, ruling all nations in the kingdom of God. He says the fact that the time is now near, the fact that it is sure, that is the big good news today. That is the glorious silver lining behind the beclouded wretchedness of today. Here's the silver lining. He says that is the world's great hope right now. They don't know it. But this is their hope. This is their great hope. Their hope is in the kingdom. This prophesied reality. Jesus Christ returning to this earth as Messiah and King, King of Kings, Lord of Lords. It's written about in the Pentateuch, this soon coming rule over all the earth. Deuteronomy 18, verse 18, David wrote about this coming rule of Jesus Christ in the Psalms. You can read all about it in Isaiah 9 and other passages in his book, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, Daniel. Daniel there in chapter 7 talking about the saints ruling with Jesus Christ and how that kingdom is going to consume all other kingdoms. Discussed in all of the minor prophets as well. The prophet Zephaniah, he said, the Lord thy God in the midst of you is mighty. He will save. He will rejoice over you with joy. He will rest in his love. He will joy over you with singing. That's in Zephaniah 3 in verse 17. The book of Zechariah, you've got the entire 14th chapter that talks about Christ's return. Setting foot on the Mount of Olives. That's in the Old Testament. In the New Testament, you see in Luke 1 that Jesus Christ was born to be king. He was born to rule this world. When Pilate asked Jesus if he was born to be king, Jesus' response was, yes. Yes, I was born to be king. Not of this world, but of the world to come. The world tomorrow. And this is why, of course, he didn't take over the reins of government at his first coming. Then you get to the prophecies, the dire prophecies of Mark 13, Matthew 24, all these bleak events that we're seeing the early stages of right now. This is what leads up to the return of Christ to this earth. Mark 13, 26, it says, and then shall they see the Son of Man. This is after the tribulation, great tribulation, Matthew 24, 21, and 22, and then this, they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds with great power and glory, and then shall he send his angels and shall gather together his elect from the four winds, from the uttermost part of the earth to the uttermost part of heaven. He will come again. He said so. He's coming out of the clouds with great power and glory. The angels are coming with him. The first fruits are going to rise in the air to meet him. Jesus said in John 14, if I go, I will come again. This is what Mr. Armstrong said in Mystery of the Ages. How amazing, what a tragedy, that in church services and gospel preaching today, one seldom, if ever, hears of Christ as a coming king and world ruler. Spiritual principalities and powers of evil are ruling the world today. It is these earthly governments of Satan that will be destroyed and replaced by Christ at his second coming. It says Christ's kingdom is of the world tomorrow. There is another world coming, a much, much better world. It's to be headed up by the King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. This is the good news message that Jesus Christ proclaimed, the gospel message of the kingdom of God, and it is the world's only sure hope. It's why true Christians, when they pray, begin with this earnest and heartfelt petition, Thy kingdom come. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can send feedback to td@kpcg.fm. Thank you for joining us on today's program, and we'll see you tomorrow.